Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
We came here on his back, and we caught your eye. The salt sea ocean wind made the seagulls cry. The rocking of his house had me holding on, but I knew that I was safe from there on out.
All right, welcome to Snacky Tunes. That was just Of Monsters and Men from Finner off the My Head is an Animal. I was a little late on that album, not going to lie. It wasn't until, I don't even know where, maybe out in Palm Springs I saw the video for their single.
Yeah.
What's the name of their single, Amrit?
I don't know the name of their single. I can tell you that I saw them in Iceland when I went to Iceland Airwaves last year.
Oh, how was that?
The festival itself was great. If you go, try the lobster soup.
I can't eat lobster. I'm allergic.
Well, everyone who can eat lobster should try the lobster soup.
I thought you were a vegetarian.
I eat fish. I'm a pescatarian.
Do
I would call
pizza?
Myself a pescatarian if
the
I didn't find that to be an obnoxious term.
Pescatarian. It is obnoxious.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I eat fish and vegetables.
James, do you find pescatarian an obnoxious term?
I think I think it's people are trying to feel better about not being vegetarians, except for yourself.
Right.
Yeah, it's just like I in high school, because you know being a vegetarian is cool, what you did back in the day. I was like, I'm a vegetarian, but you know I eat chicken.
Right.
And then we talk about how tough it is to be a vegetarian.
Well, you know, we're on the eve of South by Southwest, which is when so many people from this neighborhood go down to Texas. And the first time I went down there, I holed up in my hotel and I asked them what their vegetarian options were. And they looked really confused for a minute. And they looked at the menu and they're like, well, we have a chicken Cobb salad.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this. Austin, the food scene in Austin, and we can get to that later in the show, has really expanded and grown to actually be one of the top, I think, culinary destinations in the world. And speaking of another great culinary destination, we have James Malios.
Correct.
Bang.
Very nice. Nicely
done.
Thank you so much. From the wonderful Amali in the Upper East Side.
Yeah, I know. It's
not my normal haunt.
That's okay.
I see East 60th and I start to get a nosebleed.
It's I'm from New York and I still feel sometimes like I get a nosebleed when I'm working there.
Yeah, you go, it's above 14th. How far above 14th is really above 14th?
15th.
15th? That's the right answer.
After my own heart.
Yeah, so James is one of the owners, the owner?
Yeah, the owner. My partners own a few other restaurants, and they've been in the restaurant game for a long time, including iconic restaurants like Cantonori, Periali, the Stone Oriole,
okay.
Some other joints.
So some heavy hitters.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so before we get to the current state of your involvement in the culinary world, let's go back to when you were a wee lad in Queens, and you said that you're the only kid in a Greek grade school whose parents did not own or operate a diner.
Yeah, yes, and what might be, given the current economic state, slightly prophetic, I think my father was the only one who actually paid taxes.
Right.
In my grade school class.
I didn't really realize that back in the day that diners were really owned and operated by Greek. Are you Greek?
I am. You know, it's funny, the Greek guys are always complaining the diner business is, quote, not what it was. Maybe similar to how doctors are complaining about how they don't really make much money. But I think it's not that they're any less busy. It's just that now it's all credit cards, so they have to report the income.
Oh, yeah.
It's by comparison, it's, you know, less off the top, but it's still the same business.
Yes, but even though your father was involved, your grandparents were involved in a, less than legal type of operation?
Yes. My grandmother's family, my grandmother grew up in Lower East Side, was actually raised at Macaulay's Mission, which is still there. And her family ran an actual speakeasy, and Greek sailors and Turkish sailors would bring hash off the boats. They had a little distillery offshore, a little revolving door, and they used to pay Tammany Hall off. So
during Prohibition?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Where was the speakeasy?
My grandmother didn't remember, honestly, but she grew up in, if it had to be right around Center Street, because that's where the Macaulay's Mission is, and that's where she was raised.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's I don't know how that like Kennedy drug money never found its way to my family now, but it's unfortunate, but it's pretty cool.
Do you still have that mischievous outside the
hall? I was about to say, it seems like the hustle and flow kind of stuck
you know, I have always said that to work in food, you have to be a little criminal.
Yeah, I find that being a lawyer somehow allows you to look at regulations for their spirit, not necessarily for their letter.
And I have always said it's fun to smoke hash and eat food.
That's true. They go very well together.
Yes.
Not that I would know.
That's my waistline.
Yeah. So where did your love of food come from? Father, mother,
You know, I think
grandmother?
I think the whole family, I think I could probably tell the same story that's typical of many immigrants in their life revolving around food. But I think it's growing up was a great sense of hospitality in my family, and that's something that stuck with me. You know, into life.
Big Sunday meals?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, a small, like my mother would literally put out probably four different types of meat if family came over, not to mention sides and vegetables and everything else, and she'd be concerned that perhaps there was not enough food on the table.
You know, it's funny with Greeks and Italians and myself being Jewish, there's always this culture around food, which I feel... what? Hop in.
And Indians.
But do Indians have the big Sunday afternoon meal?
They have just big meals anytime you can get everyone to sit around a table.
Yeah, that's true.
And you do have those long weddings, which are always Janice.
This man knows what he speaks. Yeah. It's true.
Do you find that in modern times, that emphasis, especially in America, on those meals and that length has sort of disappeared?
I think, I can speak when I was growing up, and I can speak, I'll answer your question two parts. Okay. When I was growing up, I definitely had a sense of sustainability naturally from my grandparents, because they basically did with what they could. They emphasized that tradition and that Mediterranean emphasis on sustainability. Now, there weren't the options, I think, that existed then that exist now. And I think that even though the personal connection isn't maybe there for people today, there is the ethos of it is far more prevalent in writings, you know, on this show. I mean, this show would not have been in this capacity. I probably would about food would have been as current maybe 20 years ago. People definitely would not be understanding it.
No, it's I mean, for one, I think that food has become part of the mainstream pop culture in a way today that 5 years ago, it just wasn't. I mean, it wasn't there.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you asked, I think if people went to college, told their parents they're going to go into the hospitality or food business now, is a wildly different thing than if they said it 10 years, even 5 years ago, but certainly 10 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. I think saying that you wanted to be a chef 5-10 years ago was just...
It's like you'd get arrested or something.
You get arrested, yeah. What, you don't want to finish high school?
Right.
But you did not do that. You went and became a lawyer.
Yeah, I did. I being the high school, Bronx Science High School debate nerd that I was, and being no professional debating circuit, I thought that being a lawyer was probably the next best thing.
How did you enjoy it? What did you eat in college? What do lawyers eat?
We were at Cornell, so we had a pretty good dining program.
Oh, yeah. You have one of the best hospitality schools in the world.
Yeah, yeah. We have a guy who works, Sammy Shaldaff, who's our maitre d', and he went to La Roche, which is a Swiss school. So I always see them and say, you go to the Cornell Hotel School of Switzerland, which he finds less than amusing.
Yeah, it's just like when I tell my friend who got into Brown University, I went to Boston University. He's like, oh, we're both at BU. She did not at all find that very funny.
Well, you guys have good hockey, better hockey than us.
We did, but I got there 2 years after Drury, I got to see a lot of photos of him in the rebuilding, you know.
Yes,
I was there during Drury.
Were you?
I went to Boston University, yeah.
How did I not know that? Or did I know that?
I knew that about you.
Huh.
Yeah.
Go Terriers.
Yeah, go Terriers.
The food there. You know what I miss about Boston? I miss the burritos. They have excellent burritos there.
Yeah, I feel like New York never, at least maybe until recently, I take that back. Maybe until recently, for a long time, New York had a rap as having bad Mexican food.
Well, they did, but now you have Calexico, Dos Toros.
Yeah, Dos Toros is great.
Dos Toros, they've been on the show before. They're awesome.
Yeah, so the best store ever.
It's amazing.
Every time I go in, I'm happy yet annoyed that I didn't think of it.
Every time I go in there, I just want to yell at every other New Yorker and be like, see?
Why don't you
not
explain
that hard
for people?
Oh, Dos Toros is a San Francisco Mexican food transplant. These two brothers that came out, and they're just doing gangbusters.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Greg. Welcome.
To further explain Dos Toros, they solved the issue of like how to make good, cheap Mexican food. I mean, you could get that type of quality, but you'd have to pay like $20-something, and they're like, they solved a really big issue.
Yeah, because I think they were smart, and they just said, you know, we're going to have these seven things, they're going to be great, and you have less variables, and they don't have to, not to get into restaurant dorky math, but it was just very smart what they did.
Yeah.
So when did you go from being a lawyer to saying, I want into the food business? How long was that thought process? What made you...
Yeah, I generally found after representing a lot of, I'm not just sounding of the moment here, a lot of bankers and traders who are making a lot of money and trying to get them more money, even if it was for good reasons like discrimination, to be slightly unfulfilling. And basically I had a friend who was working for a hospitality development company outside of the state and said, hey, you want to help me out? Open a restaurant for 3 months. We'll goof around. You'll help me with some lawyer stuff. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever, 3 months, fine. Yeah, well, anyway, three years later,
right.
My mother sort of, like, can't believe her Greek son went back into the restaurant business. Every Greek is trying to get their kid out of the restaurant business. and then I found myself back in New York. I was outside of the state, actually by your neck of the woods, out in the Delaware Valley area. And then came back here and worked at a couple of places before opening Amali.
I mean, I know I just came to the show, but making that decision to leave, how we covered this? Because Amrit, sitting across from us, was also when we first met, you were still a lawyer as well.
That's true.
So what is it that kind of opens up, like, you have the security, you have the money, there's like a very easy, not maybe not easy, but the future is there, like it's a thing. And how do you take that decision and go into something for you, for food and for Amrit, for music? And what did that just like, what were you feeling to make that decision?
Yeah, I'll go first. The
mouthful of food.
Then I'll grab the Mad Morgan after. The for me at least, it was, I think it was a little bit of circumstance gave me the push. You know, I just left a firm, and I think had that, I don't know if I would have had the gumption to do it just outright, but I had a little bit of circumstance gave me a bit of a push. And then once I got a taste, so to speak, no pun intended, of the work that I found fulfilling and valuable, I was like, well, forget this other stuff. This is for the birds, you know. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know a single lawyer, literally a single lawyer, that when I tell them this, that they even, all I see is like a sad face, like we escaped or something.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a happiness mixed with envy, which I think jealousy is love and hate at the same time, in the words of the bard Drake. and I think that's what I get when I talk to my lawyer friends. Yeah, for me, I mean, it was just, I was always very creatively frustrated as an attorney, and I'm a musician, and I was minoring in music and majoring in political science and philosophy as an undergrad. And going to law school was really, you know, to talk about the immigrant experience, it was to satisfy a push from my immigrant parents to do something real with my life and at least have a piece of paper to demonstrate that, like, my future was safeguarded in some way, which it was. And I just found that in moving to New York, really my plan was to make my own music, and I didn't have the time to do it because I was working as an attorney and had a lot of money to buy tickets to shows. And for the first time, decided that I would, like, write about music, because I was in law journal at law school writing, but never writing about music until I started a website. And then I got very lucky from that point on.
I mean, I think the good thing about it was that it does, back to your question, having a license to practice law does give you some mental security. Like, you say, okay,
yes,
well,
right.
At least, you know, I know I can go back and find a job doing something.
Absolutely,
you know, maybe
true.
It's not exactly what I want, or, you know,
absolutely
whatever.
True.
But
I think it allows you to throw yourself into your dreams a bit more. And speaking specifically as someone who is, like, occasionally hilariously identified as a music critic, I think that there is a degree to which I find other music critics tend to project some of their own insecurities about their station in life. I mean, these are really hyper-educated people who don't necessarily know where their next paycheck is always coming from, because a freelance grind is a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I never really felt about it that way, so I never really approached my subject with that sort of, like, tension and anxiety that was waiting to project upon my victim, so to speak. You know, for me, it was much
more elevate while putting other people down.
Yeah, for me, it was much more about celebrating what was happening at the time. And for me, it was, like, such a joy to be delivered from the profession of the law that I never really brought that negative energy into it, you know. And that comes with the security of the law degree.
One more question. Do you feel that the negotiating skills that you learned as a lawyer has been helpful in both of your jobs?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I do, once in a while I get in a dispute with someone and they, I'm going to, you know, call my lawyer, or I'm going to sue you for with 20-year linen contract for a 3-week, you know, time that you receive them. And I'm like, well, you can just go ahead and do that. That's quite fine.
Yeah, that's fine. If you, that's totally fine. I know exactly where you're going to get. Yeah. Isn't it funny when people threaten legal action who have no idea what they're talking about?
Yeah, that's my favorite. I had that, someone do that recently. And I just start doing, I say, write this down. I go 391-3393. That's my bar number. Make sure you attach it to any paperwork, and by all means, happy to receive service.
It's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, for me, it was also just going to law school is intellectual boot camp, and you really think about things, learn how to synthesize information, make arguments, and present yourself and your case in a way that is applicable to so many things beyond the specific practice of the law.
No,
and that is something that I've found.
I mean, I think that's the one thing that having, like, a liberal arts and a random minor in history education just developed the way to think about things.
Absolutely.
More than just being like, okay, like, I'm working in the food industry, I'm doing this production. It's, you know, I find a lot of success with people who have a varied background before they go into the profession of choice. You know, how many, you know, to sort of like PAs or line cooks, something like that, who have no scope outside of just the job at hand.
Yeah, I have that discussion a lot, actually, especially in the food business, where I say, no, I understand, I get it. This is the way it's been passed down from whoever, you know, Escoffier to Boulud, et cetera. But you guys all grew up in the same thing, and there is a critical analysis that can happen that someone outside can look and say, well, you know, maybe that's just a historical thing that you do it for that way, not because it's smart.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick musical break. And then when we get back, I really want to talk about the farm-to-table approach at Amali because it's a Mediterranean restaurant and there's not a lot of farm-to-table Mediterranean restaurants. Are you the only one in New York?
Yeah, the way I would define it, yes.
Boom. All right, so we're going to get a song from Amar. Amar, what are you playing? You're playing one song.
I'm playing one song right now, and we said the word hospitality too many times for me not to play a song by the band Hospitality.
So okay.
It's called Betty Wang.
Betty Wang, roll your jeans, put your hair and clear your sleeves. I don't care where you live or how far up down it is. Cross the street, we could meet at the Edison Hotel. Got you lunch, got you sleep, pick you up, my stays to me. Susha, 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 Susha.
That was just Hospitality with Betty Wang.
That is correct.
Which was a track by Amrit. They're going to be at South By?
They're going to be at South By Southwest. That is why I played them. And also because this is Mr. Dream. I'm just going
to... Preview.
You like that?
Yeah.
A little preview of what's to come if you stick around on the Heritage Radio Network.
If you ever listen to How You Want It Done, just go back and check out a podcast on how you just make individual playlists. We can talk later.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'd like to take some lessons from you guys.
But we have in studio Amrit Singh of Dosa Hunt and Stereo Gum.
Thank you for the introduction.
And we also have James Malios from Amali, which is the only farm-to-table Mediterranean restaurant in the city.
I'm sorry, shouldn't it be like seated table?
It's fun. It's
yeah.
We actually wrote a little bit of a blog about that on the website. How the term farm table is sort of a misnomer. You could sort of have a farm driven or a sustainable driven, but there's got to be a better term than farm table because that's just not feasible to run a business.
Well, look, it's just like the term foodie,
right?
It's like everyone everyone hates it now, but when you say that, you just know what I mean.
It's a starting point,
exactly. And I mean we use it because I've tried giving this longer explanation, and even on the phone and. I hear someone snoring on the other end or something. I'm like, all right, fine. Just farm to
my table. Friend Joe Mandy, who's a great stand-up comedian, has a great bit about being a foodie, but also really being into breathing and being a breathy, and really loving sleepy too. So often he's just a sleepy, but like breathy, he could just like breathe. He could just do that all day.
So let's talk about Amri.
Often he does, like just all the time.
And let's talk about the history of it, how it came to fruition, and what your involvement is.
Sure. Yeah. I went to this. To me, the history, the concept was generally there was this restaurant. In Greece that I used to go to, and they just served lunch. They didn't have any refrigeration. They had a small ice box.
Yeah.
Right, that was it. And they had lunch, and they basically had a lot of vegetables and a couple grilled meats, and some seafood. What they had was what they had. They were out. They didn't care. And the food was not necessarily Greek, like taverna Greek. I mean, it was definitely clean as a, and I think that, certain meals are, there's a Mediterranean tradition that's even been codified by the UN that exists, whether you're in Portugal or Spain or Italy or Greece, similar style meals. So that place is the inspiration conceptually for me for the restaurant.
When you say codified by the UN, You mean like actually codified by the United Nations?
Yeah, there's UNESCO, which is where they protect, you know, they recognize and
traditions.
Say that traditions, right, exactly. They're worthy of protection, and they actually in 2010 defined the Mediterranean diet, I don't use the word diet, but lifestyle is what the word really means, as being something that's shared and linked to the, you know, sustainability and worthy of protection. Nice.
So when you say Taverna experience, do you mean it, and I'll make an analogy here, it's like Italian red sauce sort of thing, and but the restaurant was the different type of Greek food that isn't just checkered tablecloth red sauce in the Italian world?
Yeah, precisely. I think the Greeks suffer from the Italians in that, for that culture, in that same way, because, you know, that perception of Greek food is, well, the Ottoman side, but, you know, there's also parts of Greece that were colonized by the Venetians, so their food doesn't look anything like that.
Right, right, right.
You know, but one guy wrote a cookbook 80 years ago, and somehow that cookbook and moussaka has come to define Greek food for all
time. So, like, potato fries and lamb.
I forget what book. I just got that Greek cookbook, that, like, tome that just came out last year. I forgot the name of the person who wrote it, but it was just one of my...
Was it Kachilis's book?
I think on Faden.
I know the one you're talking about. I haven't gotten it. Yeah, I know. I remember reading about it. You know, I've read a couple ones by Kachilis, which go to regional areas, and I definitely read that a lot before opening the concept of the restaurant. And you know, I'll say though, the one thing I think is important, so I don't forget it, is that with the Mediterranean, that tradition and the best expression of it is that UNESCO document. For us, at least for me, when we were doing the restaurant. And we're doing the food, I was like, well, you know, this is kind of, and knowing a lot of people who say they're sustainable, and I know for a fact that they're not, either I know people who worked in those kitchens, I was kind of pissed, and I said, you know what, we should be more than this. We should do it for design, and then we should do it for wine, too, because if you're going to say you subscribe to an ethos, then you should let that ethos sort of permeate everything. So,
right, it can't just, you know, it's like always when it's like, when you see on the bottom of the menu, it's like, we go for, you know, food when possible,
yeah.
And you're like, well, that just kind of like, well, what does that mean? Like, is it when possible 10% of the time? Is it possible 40% of the time? You know, it's like, it's either like,
right? Is it possible when it's on sale and that's great?
Yeah, you know? It's like it doesn't really instill like the confidence. It's like, well, we, you know,
yeah. I also dislike the self righteousness of a lot of menus, which is why we have a QR code on ours. We're like, look, we do this. If you want to read more, check out the code.
Yeah.
If not. I'm not gonna.
There's a great Tumblr blog. It's called "Pictures of People Scanning QR Codes." Pictures of People Scanning QR Codes. Tumblr.com. Go ahead and check it out if you're on the internet right now. And it's a Tumblr blog. And basically, when you load it, it says "No posts as of this date."
Is that the joke?
That's the joke.
You just ruined the joke.
Sorry. Well, I mean, you know, you guys aren't gonna look it up right this.
No, I probably.
I just looked it up.
So let's talk about the menu and about what sort of food you experience and how it's not going to be your Greek fries and moussaka and Slovakia.
Right.
You know, like what happens when you open up the restaurant? You know, what's the first big thing I'm going to notice when I sit down and look at the menu?
I think you're going to notice, you know, the menu we do with our chef Devin. First of all, the categories track the style and the way people eat in the Mediterranean on a daily basis. So the categories track grains, olive oil, charcuterie, vegetables, and we, you know, small plates, but those are almost all vegetables for us. So we really have, and then we have a small section of, you know, of entrees, which are, you know, sort of prime cuts. But for us, we bring whole animals in, so we use them all. If you look at the menu and you know what you're looking for, you can see where, when we bring in a steer, where that steer sort of shows up.
Where would a steer show up that I might not expect to show up? And what part of it is showing up?
That's a very good question. I would say sometimes in stocks or in stocks a lot. We, you know, using the bones ourselves instead of ordering them. People wouldn't pick that up. For some of the sausages which we do make, you know, we just sort of say sausage. We don't go on and on about like we reserve a medal for making our own sausage.
Right.
So that's probably the secret, but it's probably the secret would be the cuts. If you're like, we'd say what cuts went into what would probably be the more secretive, but you know,
is humility a big part of Greek culture? because
not the guys I know.
Yeah, I'm just asking.
Not the guys I know, but I think that, like any ethos, it's like if you're really devout, you know, if you're of any religion, I think the people who are devout should probably talk about the least or just be, you know, good about it in the way they talk about it. So I think that we try to, at Amali, do the same thing without, you know, totally not marketing it.
Yeah.
Not, you know, we're not charity. So I guess, yeah, so design two, you know, with the tables, for example, we repurposed from our own ceiling, all the lumber's from M. Fine out in, out here in Bushwick, which I know there are no restaurants on the Upper East Side with, you know, all repurposed, items. So anyway, so going to your point to succinctly, the style of the menu is Mediterranean. The things we emphasize are Mediterranean. And I think for everyone else, Mediterranean is just like, I'm going to use this as an excuse to put red sauce on the same menu as, you know, shish kebab or something.
And your menu changes seasonally?
Yeah, seasonally. Certainly with vegetables, definitely. Usually what we do is, like, for example, when we bring in lambs from Elysian Field. So the lamb will always stay the same. We'll always have the lamb chop. Yeah. Or what we do is we rotate through cuts.
Okay.
So, for example, the menu just says lamb. So what's the cut? Today the cut is porterhouse. Tomorrow the cut is leg. Or, you know, as we're going through the animal. But the accompaniments on the dish are going to change with seasons, and vegetables certainly change.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's nice. And it's nice to provide that variety and be able to communicate that to people. You know, so it's like you have a lot of specials without really having to go and invest in extra product, which could be wasted.
And so what's coming up for you guys in the next couple months?
You know, right now, Chef Devin and I, we're working on a dinner we can do with our whole lambs that we're bringing in. And we're working on that in conjunction with Elysian Fields. Maybe looking at doing a comparison of mutton versus a middle-aged lamb, which I believe the name is, I forgot now, it has to do with how many teeth they have. It's like a Hogarth. It sounds like a Bogart. It sounds like some sort of ghost.
Okay.
And then, and obviously the spring lamb, which is coming up. So,
gotta love a spring lamb.
Yeah, that's for us, and for Greeks generally, it's a bit of a wet dream.
And then hopefully we'll be rocking and rolling with you guys on the June 30th barbecue.
Yeah, we're really excited to come out for that. I think it's definitely these ethos of the show is something that we definitely believe in, even all the way up there in Nosebleed Heaven on 60th
well,
Street.
We'll be making our way up there. Very soon up there.
Very good. Very
huge.
Good.
You know, it's funny because when we were growing up, our parents would always go, what was it called? The Greek Kitchen? It was down on South Street, like South 8th and South Street. And they always made us go eat there, and we always would like kick and scream. And now it's, you know, Greek food is one of my favorite types of cuisines.
Well, you know, they say una faccia, una razza, which is the Italian one face, one race, as the Italians and Greeks are not that far apart.
Yeah. So what are the nuts and bolts? What's the website? What's the actual address?
Absolutely. So we're on 60th Street between Park and Lexington. So I think if you're uptown shopping in that district, that'd be a good time when people are in that neighborhood to come by.
Not a far jaunt from Columbus Circle, Central Park.
Exactly. And website is Amali NYC, Amali NYC, same with Twitter and Facebook, so in which we post our specials and
Open
stuff
Table.
We're doing on. Open Table, yep, absolutely. Coming soon on a bunch of other, like Tumblr and stuff, we're going to start doing next week.
Twitter feed?
Hashtag Amali NYC. Amali NYC.
Awesome. Well, stick around. We'll eat some pizza.
Thanks, man.
Getting ready to have some songs from Amrit. Amrit, what do you have coming for us?
Well, I could launch into one right now.
Let's launch into...
Does that sound good?
Yeah. Why don't you launch into a track and we'll come right back.
All
right.
This is by a guy named Mr. Motherfucking Exquire, and it's called Huzzah.
Nice.
All right. I'm doing 40. Breast milk, you made my day. No, we had to do a remix, right? Take that.
Junk driving on a Wednesday with three bitches in an MPV, half a gallon of Georgie Porgy, and cranberry, that's the POP.
The law of passion.
A recipe for terror. We make some shit together, and then we have an orgies. We live this life forever. We never gonna stop. You with us, let me hear you scream.
One vodka soda poured over four leaf clovers. He be the luckiest fuck this side of the rainbow. You know what? We seen the blood and the guts and the gang signs get grown up. We seen the fight and the fuss for that same pot of gold. But he hold the dice and he roll them. And if he loses, it's a hold up. Plus got them sticks and them stones. I don't bust him thin brittle bones up. Won't switch his pitch or his tone up for no more. Bitch, he a grown up. The kid is so sober. They didn't think he would show up. Slow up. we hit the town. Cop back slapping is silly. Don't beat him while he down or whatever his favorites will be. I ain't a killer, but don't kill me.
Beer and whiskey shots, weirder than 50 Pac, Biggie or Ricky Rise, some Jiggy, I'm Vicky Rise. Kiss, don't love the game, shot clock and above the game. Ballers is shot, collars be calling me Bob Cost. This sports, I'm a mortal technique, I'm obnoxious. Tell the people telling me to stop it. Probably they be jealous cause we sell it at a profit. Keenan and Kellen it and it's awesome. I'm Nas, man, I'm God's son. Not done, I'm on one, I'm dumb, I don't got guns, dude. But let's battle and see who's sons who. I'm reading Sun Tzu, translating Don Kalu. Illuminati into Spanish, wrapping my body in bandages.
Drunk driving on a Wednesday. All my friends be rapping. They always be writing. Wake up tomorrow like what happened? The verse done and it's always I though. Hey yo, Michael Jackson is Monty Python. All of y'all pricks can suck my dick. I'm stupid and shit, but I'm about to be rich. I'm at the Pizza Hut, I'm at the Taco Bell. The combination made my eyes bleed. It's hurting, I'm swerving, the nervous MC. I'll rap on the track if my friends let me.
Thank you, friend.
You guys are hype, but I ain't trying to have an orgy. Jameson and Ginger Ale, occasionally the Georgie. The pop off, the Dubra, all of that shit.
All of it.
Proper and super, they falling back quick. I got three shirts and they all look expensive. 2,000 Volkswagen, mad old and dented. Skateboard P, Ashanti, Foolish. The worst rapper on this track, Esquire, third coolest.
Straight shots of Quavo, blunts to the neck. Got a rat bitch that smoke blacks inside a plastic melt. My legacy is shining like a diamond on a tanning bed. Climbing on your niggas, put the iron to your head. Instead, your niggas trying to get ahead. Like a straight bullet, your niggas misled. I'm about my bread, drink, you can roll. Try to stop that, get a bagel size hoe. Cause in a bed, nice, heat the house, use the stove. Took a cold bath to walk to school in the snow. Cause now I take it back, when these niggas was frontin'. Now I got something, ain't worried about nothing, nigga. Me and my niggas bout to take the world over. Me and my niggas bout to take the world over. Rollin' out of onion, blunt Paul Bunyan. Onion booty bitch crying, deep throat sons.
Three shots of sterno, wick stuck in a bottle empty.
Three
blocks to the target, we lit it and lobbed it hard to sentry.
Four
pigs of the oinkin' variety guard the market entry.
Five
minutes of flames and an aim to whistle my father let me.
6 o'clock,
we meet up and divvy the shells among the youngin'. Seven continents in a shit and smoke like it's fucking London. Before they ate up the funds, our harmony love was bumpin'. Now government issue nines and pointed where your blood is pumping. Turn them off of these muttering zombie talker pieces. Alabama knew harder than Fukushima breezes. In the end with a dozen or so adjourner reason, you find a verdict return corrupted in murderous seasons. With a murder 31s and other unlucky omens. That's why I chuck 7 and 7 till I'm fucking homeless. And every time you think my 15 minutes of fame up, I spit another 16 and prove to the world I fucking own it.
Damn, it feel good to see people up on it. Couple thousand views on YouTube, but niggas still hungry. No food in my stomach, in my pockets fucked up. Plus my mother still works, so why should I give a fuck? Fuck a blog, fuck a label, fuck a meeting, fuck a A&R. Fuck a coast sign, motherfucker, fuck it all. Still lost his holding Caulfield, the catcher in the rise. Go fuck a smut nut and try to catch her in the eye. Big belly, still take my shirt off like Nelly. Rocks the pasta from Footprints, by liquor out the deli and shit. My past negligence that made me rebellious. Arrested development, the rest is irrelevant.
Fuck the throne,
watch the project bench covered in pigeon shit. This for my nigga Lowe's till we see him again. Stretch a nigga like a regular tease. Run the outlet, hide in my rhyme book. From the grammar talk clever, Mr. Beer mops and noxious as Roger Klotz. I plot as the clock tick tocks to make the world suck my cock. Validated in every wrong decision I ever did. My ex-girl thought I wouldn't ever be shit. Well, looky here, bitch, my dick grew 6 inches since then. Will I make it out the projects? I guess it depends. Huzzah, bitch.
So I guess it's not another song.
My God, that song was so dirty. I'm
well,
so sorry.
You're not it's internet. Sorry. It's internet radio.
I know.
You guys actually. You know who you can apologize to? My mom, who listens to podcasts.
Oh my God, Ms. Bresnahan.
And you've met her.
Yeah, I have. And I plan to meet her.
And before I forget, James, there was one event you wanted to mention.
Yeah, thanks. I'm sorry. Thank you. I forgot about it. Tonight and every month, we do a series of organic, sustainable, vin natural wine dinners in partnership with the Organic Wine Journal.
Oh,
tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool, and we always make sure the winemakers are there. So tonight we have Chateau Cafrea from Becca Valley in Lebanon. And it's starting at 7 o'clock tonight. And there's details on the website.
Beautiful.
NYC.
Ms. Bresnitz, don't think me a depraved human being. I was just being a cultural emissary for.
And
for
I told Amrit when he asked if we could play a song like this. I said, if there's no other song that can get your point across,
and
play.
There just wasn't.
So there we go. So hey, look, they're just words.
So that's Mr. Motherfucking Esquire. Even his, you can't even say his name without offending Greg and Darren's mom.
So I always wonder when a band or a rapper puts an expletive in their name.
Yeah,
like, you know, and even like a band like Fucked Up, who has had New York Times articles written about them.
Tremendous amount of success.
Is it just like so punk rock, or do they just think that like it just doesn't matter anymore if they don't have a name they can say on the radio?
It's like it's anti-marketing. You know, it's like you're telling the world exactly. The idea is just that we are so punk that we will use an expletive and never get covered by the kind of places that you don't want to see your favorite bands get covered by until they cover them.
Right.
It's a sleight of hand. It's naming jujitsu.
I don't think Fucked Up did name jujitsu. I just think. Unless it was like so calculated from the beginning.
Dude, Damien is such a larger than life. Such a larger than life character. Pink Eyes. I mean, I can't imagine him being destined for anything other than tons of attention. Even now, he's on like Fox News, Red Eye.
Like, dude, that was like a one time thing.
Yeah,
that was a one time thing years ago.
Okay, Fox News. No, first of all, he was on as a correspondent. He was gonna be a correspondent. He did, I think, more than one stint. Regardless,
dude,
he hosts a show on Much Music or whatever this network is called. So
Much
the
Music
idea
is Canada's answer to MTV.
Is
they
it?
Have, they have
or
two.
Fuse?
They have. Well, yeah. Now it's Fuse in America, but Much Music and La Musique, I think, because they have to, you know, the Canadian laws with. Their love-hate relationship with American culture, where they had to have a percentage of French-Canadian music.
I see.
I digress. We're going too north when we're heading south.
Oh.
Let's talk about South by Southwest.
Okay, so, well, the reason that I brought up the track by Mr. MFN Esquire is because... You're very welcome. In that one track, you get an intersection of a lot of the hip-hop that sort of... bubbling up on blogs that don't always just cover hip-hop and also just will be really prevalent down in South by Southwest and Austin next week. This week, right? Shit. Tomorrow. On that track with Mr. Motherfucking Esquire, it was Despot, Danny Brown, Das Racist, and LP. And it's basically just like the definitive Jux...
R.I.P.
Fast forwarded. Like that culture.
Do you know that was my first job?
Did not know that.
World's Fair and Def Jam.
Actually, that wasn't your first job in New York.
Anyway, that's my first music job.
There we go.
So most of those guys you can catch down in Austin this week. Mr. Motherfucking X-Ray will be playing a lot of sets. So will Das Racist will be playing a couple. They'll be there from Thursday till Saturday. And Danny Brown will be all over the place too. And Schoolboy Q and Black Hippie are some other rap collectives and artists that are going to be down there. So it's going to be a good year for rap. I think it was last year it was all about Odd Future.
I was going to say, the rap scene at South By used to be non-existent.
Yeah, and now you got Jay-Z playing down there tonight.
You do.
Yeah.
He's an up-and-comer.
Yeah. Well, that's what this whole festival exists for.
I think it's all about trying to spotlight up-and-coming
talent.
Look, I think he's got the chops.
Jay-Z's playing. Bruce Springsteen is another guy that I kind of
another guy from
think
Jersey.
Might make him a band to watch.
Really, you know.
I think John Landau just wrote an article about him somewhere.
Anyway, let's talk about the bands that you're excited about. You're excited to see.
Who'd you give us last year? You gave us Yuck, I think.
Last year I gave you Yuck. I gave you Liturgy.
Austra.
I gave you Austra.
Which actually ended up being a relief that night. And that you, me, Angela, and Darren went to go see Austra.
Food truck night.
And then we went to... By the way, bands, if you're listening, let me give you a tip. We went to... We went out all the way out to the east side to a food truck.
First off, it's not that far out.
Okay. Not
east side
it
Kings,
felt like a
and
very...
First off, east side King, shout out to Paul Key, the man who won Top Chef.
Yeah. Shout out. So we went to his truck. And actually, if you notice, most of the events this year that I think we would be interested in, people listening to the show interested, are on the east side.
Right.
So
now that Emo's is closed.
Right.
Yeah.
Where's Dave going to go?
Dave's got Hotel Vegan.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Dave is...
So
yeah.
Anyway, so we go out. It's Amrit from Stereo Gum. We were still somewhat involved with Dinner with the Band and our own things. And then Angela, who from The Fader. And we went to go see. We sat and we watched this band play from Alaska.
Anchorage.
From Anchorage, Alaska. And for the 25-30 minutes we were there, they did not say their name once.
Right.
They didn't have any signs. Oh. They got off the stage and anything. And literally to this day,
we're keeping it real.
They like real did not dumb. Say who they were. And it's like, what's the point?
Right.
Like, you have all these different opportunities. You should at least... It's not self-promotion if you tell people who you are.
Right.
So, tip to bands, say your name.
In fairness, Blues Traveler light bands are never going to make it to Fader or Stereo Magenta with the band, which is essentially what that band was, right? But they still probably should have named it.
They should have. But they,
you don't know what I'm about these
days. Yeah.
Everything always changing.
And if you ever come onto our show again and talk ill of Blues Traveler, that'll be the last time. So who are you excited about? Who's coming back and who's new?
Well, let me do this. We talked about Austria for a second, and
they had a pretty big year.
They had a pretty big year, and South by Southwest was started getting into higher gear for them. This year, I'm excited about Trust, who are a sort of a spin-off project of Austra's. It's not Katie. Katie Stelmanis is the lead singer of Austra. It's not her. She is sort of Austra through and through. Their drummer, who you might recognize if you've ever seen this band live, you might recognize her because she's the one with the big white glasses. She's always wearing big white glasses. See, that's the one that gets a response. She's got a side project called Trust. It's her on program beats and drums and big white glasses. And the singer is a dude named Robert Alphonse. They're also from the same hometown of Canada and Toronto. And Robert Alphonse does this sort of like... he kind of looks like Ian Curtis from Joy Division doing The Running Man just nonstop while singing this really twitched out, bleak synth pop. So it's like a darker, just more disturbing take on Austra.
All right. Googability.
With a dude singing.
What's a Googability of Trust?
It's great. I mean, that's what you want to do when you name a band 2012. Just do something like Trust or name your band like
Apple
Water.
Pond.
Yeah, Pond.
Wait, do you have a trust track?
Yeah, a trust track.
Why don't we play it?
Right. Play one.
There's not much Running Man going on when that song is happening, but that gives you a sense of sort of the bleakness, right?
So where are people going to be rocking out and dancing to? Who are the heavy hitters of the Let's Sweat It Out in Austin?
Man, It's such a, you know...
Come on. It's not going to be all chill wave, is it?
Well, no, I don't think it's going to be all chill wave. I just think that you've got a good hip hop thing happening with the ones that with the artists that I mentioned earlier. There's a lot of good metal down there too. My ex colleague Brandon Stosi, who now edits it's a website. You guys might want to write this down. It's an up and coming website called pitchfork.com.
I think they cover Bruce Springsteen. And
I'm pretty sure that's what they're all about in bands.
I mean, they're from Chicago. I think they're following this guy named Kanye.
Kanye. I think that's how you got it. So he does. He's a wonderful writer in general, but he's a really great metal scholar, and he's put together a fantastic metal bill down there with like Def Heaven and Arwake and a lot of really great metal bands. So if you want to see metal in one shot, go to the Show No Mercy show, which I believe is on Wednesday day down in Austin.
That's brutal.
Yeah, it's tough. But I mean, I think that with the kind of metal that they have there, if you're seeing it at night, you would actually have to worry about your life and limb. So I think that this is the way to go.
I don't know. I think our good friend B-Shap went to some crazy metal show one year and said that they lit a car on fire and it was like it's the Sunday afternoon.
Yes, that sounds about right.
Let's talk about a band you mentioned, Friends.
Very Googleable band.
Yeah, that's a 10 out of 10
actually,
of Googleability.
It actually took me a couple days to find them. I think it was like from your help. And
my help. I had to direct you to the post I wrote on them seven months prior.
Stereogum, but I don't... Look, I just be honest. I don't read it every day and I don't
take
it all in.
It's okay.
I read it every day.
I don't know what you do every day. It's true.
But so here's the thing about Friends.
What does Greg Bresnan do with this every day?
I just send email. I literally send emails.
Wear sweaters. Did you get new jeans?
I did.
Black jeans, huh?
Okay. Yeah, just in time for Austin.
Yeah.
Here's the way that I can describe Friends when I saw them. Like, the best party band at the drunkest party you've been at in Brooklyn at like 4 a.m. Sure.
When did you see them?
We saw them together at CMJ with Taylor.
Oh,
that's Friends.
Oh, at Rubber Tracks?
At Rubber Tracks.
They had a great CMJ.
When we watched the lead singer
She picked out the girl she wanted to take home while she was singing and just like went off stage, like dropped the mic and just made a beeline.
Very nice. She was probably singing the song Friend Crush when she was doing it too.
Yeah.
I want to be your friend. Yeah.
Yeah.
She wanted to be her friend.
Yeah. Something like that.
Friend with benefits.
So what are your thoughts on Friends?
I thoroughly enjoy Friends. I saw them a couple of times at, you know, just sort of like they're the quintessential Bushwick band. And this is something that I say sitting out in Bushwick looking at all the fine people who are eating at Roberta's, which is a wonderful establishment.
I don't think the table right next to this window would be into Friends. But
I don't
the
think
table behind you would definitely be into them.
But they're the quintessential Bushwick band in terms of aesthetic, but primarily in terms of their origin story. This is a band that formed by five kids who were all simultaneously fleeing bed bugs in each of their respective Bushwick apartments. They holed up in a new Bushwick apartment and started a band called Friends. And that's how they got together, which, I mean, if there's any more Bushwick of a origin story
sounds made up.
It's, well, I mean, but would you be proud to be like, I was infested with bed bugs?
No, but that, first off, if five people were fleeing from bed bugs, they probably got bed bugs in the new apartment.
True.
I saw those, look.
They used to be called Millions of Friends, but then they're like, they just called Friends.
That's I don't know. I can't think of a similar thing.
Okay, but let's just.
I like them a lot. They remind me at times of ESG. They have this like post disco late 70s, early 80s New York City downtown cool thing. Their videos have that sort of style too, where it feels kind of like graffiti art and like run down subway stations. And they're really hearkening back to that era in a big way. And they went basically from playing lofts around Bushwick and getting a Stereogum band to watch in April, which I don't think necessarily helped them because it wasn't until CMJ that people actually started keying in. But, you know, maybe it gave them a little
morale.
Yeah,
but no, because that got them booked for CMJ.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, that you know, it's a mystery as to how these things actually work. But I just know that they caught my attention in April, and I was happy to make them a band to watch.
I'm pretty sure Freelance Whales figured out. You busk for like 2 months, and then you are playing Sold Out Webster 9 months later.
Yeah, it's another one that I made to band to watch after I saw them at a loft party on Bedford and North 8th, and made the band to watch the next day.
Was that Nick Gray's place?
That was Nick Gray's place.
I was there.
Yeah, well, that was their band to watch moment.
There's a song about that.
What's it? Well, okay, so I'm gonna play a song by Friends now. It's called Friend Crush.
That's good.
That's Friends.
I mean, it's just so catchy.
It's so catchy. They've got a look. They've got a great story. They've got some good songs.
I want document on that story.
Well, that, you mean, I'm not sure that you're going to really get that. Do you want bed bugs?
No.
Is that what that means?
Yeah, you want one of the people from Friends to come over and be like, here's the bed bugs?
Here's the bed bugs you asked for.
Because I would not be okay with that. But however...
Number one greatest fear.
Bed bugs?
Of...
That's it?
Of infestation. Dude, it's... I don't know if you ever listened to the This American Life on bed bugs. It's a bummer.
It's a terrible one. The band Sleigh Bells, there's a band called Sleigh Bells, which... Another up and comer. Another one, this is actually starting to sound pretty terrible, but another one that I made a band to watch, Sleigh Bells, used to live across the hall from me in my apartment in Williamsburg. And they left. Well, Derek was living with... this guy Will, who's now their manager, but Derek was living with them. They recorded a lot of the demo across the hall from me. I was listening to it for a while. I didn't know who they were or what they were, but I heard this demo being recorded. I'll say honestly I didn't really like what I was hearing, because they were just working on the beats and it just sounded really repetitive and annoying. But eventually they gave the demo to my mom, and that's how it happened. But they left the apartment building because of bed bugs. So that was actually one of my fears too, because they were across the hall. I'm like, that's just something that's going to happen to me now, isn't it? And it never did.
The bed bugs were in the demo.
Yeah. I think every great blog band story of the last 3 years has involved bed bugs in one way or another.
Or their van being infested with bed bugs and then being stolen.
Right.
So can we talk briefly about what the three of us are doing together?
No,
down at South
absolutely
Park?
Yeah, not.
So this Friday at 3:30, we are very excited to be hosting our very first panel, and it just happens to be Snacky Tunes Live, and we are having the wonderful and talented Richard Blaze, who will be talking about his restaurants and his new show Reinventing the Meal that we did together. And then we will also be having what's his name, what is his name? This other guy.
He's kind of a poser, I think.
Yeah. We'll be having the wonderful Amrit, who will be talking about his latest and upcoming project, which we're very excited about, Dosa Hunt.
Yes.
What is Dosa Hunt?
Dosa Hunt is an independent short film that I'm producing and I hosted, and it stars me and a bunch of my friends who play in bands, bands like Das Racist and Vampire Weekend, Yesayer, Neon Indian, and then there's a jazz musician by the name of Vijay Iyer. If you're detecting any kind of a pattern amongst that cast, it is that we are all brown colored of skin. 5/7 of us are Indian of some degree or another, South Indian, half Indian, fully Punjabi. Me and him are both Punjabi. But we also have a Mexican in the van, and we have a Persian in the van, and basically the Persian's Rostam.
And who's the
Rostam's from Vampire Weekend? He's Persian. Mexican's the Mexican Alan is Paloma. Alan Paloma. Yeah.
He plays
a band called Neon Indian, which is kind of fun. He was an honorary member of the Dosa Hunt congregation
and a past guest on Snacky Tunes.
And a man with wonderful head of hair.
He does have a wonderful head of hair. It has been trimmed down significantly from the music video that appears in the film and then his actual visage in the film itself, which is just...
But that's great, because if you ever got that red carpet moment, it's just like he looked one way for the film.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then
it's great.
Looks different.
It's been a year. So it's basically, it started kind of as a lark in a Twitter conversation between me and Rostam and Hema, and all these guys are sort of just buddies, and we go see shows together sometimes or talk or whatever, and Rostam tweeted about a dosa that he had, and I was very curious about it, because at that time I was very, really fetishizing dosa, and I was kind of looking for the best place so I could bring people there, and Hema got involved at once he saw our conversation. We took that from the Twitter feed to an email thread, and we decided that, well, we would actually do this, and then we were like, well, we should put a camera on it, and from that point on, I'm like, I'm going to make this into a movie, and that's what we did. We got a van, we all jumped in, it was kind of on a lark, and it's come together into be something kind of done with the cut. It's edited by the lovely Zoe Shack.
I've heard of her.
It is directed by and edited by the wonderful Sam Carroll, who's a wonderful director, and shot by a man named Dan Levin, and I kind of, you know, oversaw everything and produced it. And
it's called executive producer, buddy.
Okay, so I guess my title's an executive producer. I'm going to work on that for the credits before it goes out. But we're talking to film festivals. There will be screening events. Eventually, it will be online. And you know, I'm obviously hopelessly close to it. My objectivity is compromised, but I wouldn't let it go out without it being something special. And honestly, I'm very excited about what's about to happen.
So. Well, we're very excited. We're very excited that we're going to be able to talk about it in the process down at South By. That's if you have a music badge, 3:30 at the convention hall. I'm excited. We got some love on the panel.
Yeah, definitely. People seem to be excited about it.
So we got enough time to talk about one more band. Okay. Who is?
But you said you wanted to play two songs.
Yeah, it's tough.
So why don't we talk about both the bands and we'll just take the two songs out.
Okay. Is one of the bands your darlings of South By Productions?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think both of them. Both of them are darlings in their own way. One band is called 254. They're from the UK. They are the sisters Thurlow. There are these two. They're very young, and they are actually sisters, and their surname is Thurlow. They have an EP. They just signed a Fat Possum for it. They are a Stereo Gum band to watch. They make, they have some sensibilities of like alt rock from the 90s. They sound like they learned all their guitar tones and licks from reading like Guitar World magazine in the 90s, listening to a lot of like alt rock from back in that day. They worked with Alan Mulder, who's done stuff with Ride and Curve and like the shoegaze era bands like that. And I'm pretty sure he's worked on some Smashing Pumpkins stuff. He's worked with The Pains of Being Pure at Heart. So they have that kind of alt rock guitar sound. They have some digital beats sometimes. It's really great stuff. And then the other band is called Dive. Very young. They're a Beach Fossil spinoff who, in my mind, if they haven't already sort of superseded and transcended that tag, they will by South by Southwest.
I think so.
I think that they're a pretty special band, actually.
We saw them play at New Museum together.
Yes, we
and
saw them play
awesome.
New Museum. They were excellent.
They were really good.
My colleague Corbin Goble at Stereo Gum calls what they do on stage indie rock daggering, which is actually a pretty amusing description for what they do, because they just kind of bop around in this really frenetic and kind of dangerous way. But they marry kraut rock kind of rhythms, like these sort of rhythms that are reminiscent of like Can and Neu and Kraftwerk and stuff, and all those German bands, and then with like more indie rock guitars. So there's like an element of Beach Fossils, an element of like old German music, and it's really cool stuff.
Awesome. Well, Amrit, we want to thank you for having on 2 years in a row.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I think I'm sensing a trend here.
I like it. I like tradition.
And we will see. I mean, we'll see you in Austin tomorrow.
Great.
Yeah, we're really excited. You can follow us at Darren Bresnitz or at Greg Bresnitz on Twitter for all of our happenings during South By. We'll be running around. Trying to get rides to far out taco places,
yes,
and barbecue places, and we are very excited to be. Can we talk about the Bushmills thing?
No,
okay, never mind. But we're very excited to be going down, eating barbecue, seeing our friends, If any of you want to dog sit my beagle for a week, just hit me at Darren Bresnitz on Twitter. He's very easy to get along with.
And Amrit, do you want to give us all the nuts and bolts of Doza Hunt and how you can be found?
Yeah, I mean, it's just... yeah, definitely. You can check out the trailer for the film on the website, the official website for the movie, which is dosahunt.com. Dosa is a South Indian food, and that's what we're hunting. And it's DOSAHUNT.com. There's a Twitter, there's a Facebook, all that stuff. But see the trailer and see if you like it. And if you like it, you can...
One last question. What happens when you actually catch a dosa?
Well, there's no spoilers. You know, I thought you knew something about film and TV. All right, so this is a song by the band called Dive. It's called Sometime.